5,
4,
3,
2,
1.
Let's go.
It's So-So Jew. I'm the storyteller, dropping the realness from my experience.
HLS in the building, me and boundaries, we ain't never been friends.
Yeah, it's a logical genius. I don't think you're ready for this knowledge I'm about to drop.
You are now listening to
My 5 Cents.
My 5 Cents.
My 5 Cent Podcast.
Let's go. Let's get it. And welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the My 5 Cents Podcast. The podcast that offers you perspective and offers you the art of persuasion.
As we bring in
a guest that we turn into a judge. And that judge is going to have to make sense on the topic for today. And our topic for today is what, fellas?
5 skills necessary for healthy long-term love.
Here we are back at another relationship topic. And I still have these relationship topics, but I feel good about this one. I feel good about this one.
Oh, man.
Our guest is specialized in what I'm probably dealing with every episode. Our guest is certified. let me pull that back again.
Compose yourself. This is a show that we're doing.
The next word that comes out, I mean, there's some of this behavior going on up in here. I'm telling you. Our guest is a certified narcissistic trauma healing coach, okay? And I need some healing. I need some coaching. She helps. She's already laughing. She helps her clients to heal from narcissistic parents and relationships so they can finally move on, reclaim their lives, develop unshakable self-love, and establish healthy, conscious relationships like light their soul on fire.
Yeah.
Let's get right to the point. And please welcome Alex Scott. Welcome, 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 Alex.
Hey.
What's up, Alex?
Not much. I'm stoked to be here with you guys.
Happy to have you. So let me get you with the icebreaker. Alex, what is your superpower and how has it assisted you in your journey?
Oh, my superpower is I can talk to anybody and I can get people to open up. So how has it assisted me in my journey? It's quite literally what I do today. Yeah, for real.
Awesome. Awesome. I would almost say that might be mine and HLS's superpower. When we're together, we can get people to open up.
Yeah.
And then comes
the
shenanigans.
We have a talent. We have a certain skill set.
Yeah. People are telling you their deepest, darkest secrets in 5 minutes. It's like, I don't even know you. I've never told anyone this, but, and I'm like, I'm ready for it. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's kind of like that movie Taken. You know, I have a certain skill set. You know,
exactly like Taken.
It's not going to save you from being kidnapped, but I have a certain skill set.
Well, technically, it almost did because we did survive the favelas.
Oh, yes, we did.
No.
Yeah, and I was abandoned there by HLS, so this is where the trauma healing comes in that I actually need.
Right.
So,
I'm ready for it.
In that regard.
But you made it home in one piece because of your skills.
There we go. So you say that you're this trauma healing coach, especially in the realm of narcissism.
Yeah.
Now, I almost feel like the word narcissism has become somewhat of a buzzword.
100%. Yeah.
So how do you differentiate between narcissism and someone who has self-love? Because I feel like there's a line between the two.
Totally. 100%. Yeah. Narcissism has become a buzzword. And a lot of people are using it very cavalierly. Like, you pissed me off. You're a narcissist. You triggered me. You're a narcissist. And that is just the furthest thing from the truth. Narcissists who, they follow a very specific pattern of abuse. And so, and it's cyclical, so cyclical to the point to where you can start to predict it. And so for anyone who's truly survived a narcissistic relationship, it feels way more like plotting your escape than it does like having a normal breakup, because you have to be kind of calculated about it even as you exit the relationship. So someone who has self-love, like, there's, you know, narcissists, the staple is they have a lack of empathy. So someone can have self-love and still have empathy and consideration for what someone else is going through. They would not qualify as a narcissist. Someone who is truly narcissistic, like I said, follows that pattern, and they do not have a care on how they impact other people. And so you have to be looking for specific criteria to be able to really use that word truly. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, let me take it back a bit. Like, sure. How did you even end up here? Like, how did your journey start from being wherever you started to being a narcissistic trauma healing coach? Like, I'm curious about that journey. I'm sure our listeners are as well.
Yeah. So Cliff Notes version is I got married really young at 20. I got divorced really young at 23. And then as timing would have it, Bumble and Tinder were like fresh on the block, like way to meet people. So thinking I was ready to date again, start a profile, start swiping, and I end up eventually meeting a guy who 5 months into the relationship told me he had been to court-ordered therapy, was diagnosed with NPD because he had physically assaulted a woman at a club in LA. And I don't know why past me didn't leave at that moment, because again, if you've survived a relationship like this, you know, you're like, I will love you through your flaws and you will see the light and become a better person and treat me better. So that was very much how, you know, I was pursuing him in the relationship. So I stayed in it. And again, like I said, that abuse cycle is so cyclical. So for him, it was actually pretty fast. It was like every 2 weeks, it was like this constant just, you know, the cycle goes like love bomb, devalue, discard, hoover, repeat, repeat, repeat. So it was like constant breaking up, constant getting back together, really high highs, really low lows, and all of the criteria that we would look at to diagnose someone with this personality disorder. And so anyway, eventually I came to my senses, left, like I said, plotted my escape, got out of that, and started to look into what he had told me he had been diagnosed with. And I started to realize, wait, I have a parent who checks these boxes. Called my older sister, who's 9 years older. And she was like, yeah, mom was diagnosed when you were in high school. You didn't know. And I was like, no, I didn't know.
Wow.
And so then I got really serious about healing my own trauma and also just like educating, because I'm definitely a self-declared nerd. Like, I love understanding the science of like how trauma lives in the body and the subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. And so I started I call myself a certification whore. Like, I just started getting all these different certifications. And then COVID hit. And at the time, I was an event manager. And so, of course, the events industry went to shit. So I was furloughed from my job. And my partner at the time was actually like, I've learned so much from healing and healthy relationships. Like, you should just do this for work. And so I started my business. And now here I am going on 4 years later. Actually, it'll be 4 years later this month. And wow. I've helped over 1,400 people worldwide, which is so dope to think about. Like, that's so many really people.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's why I got into doing what I do today, from healing my own stuff first and then loving the results for myself, that I was like, I want to give this to other people.
That's cool. That's cool. Let me follow up on something then.
Yeah.
When you say, you said it twice already. When you say escape, plotting your escape for the relationship, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Like, why not just leave? Because it sounds like you're escaping from a captor, right? Like, someone who is holding you hostage. Like, is there like a fear? Like, not just you, but just in general.
Totally.
Right? Like, is there a fear factor or what is it?
That's definitely part of it. Like, it feels like you're a marionette and the narcissist is just like you're controlling you, right? Like, you're just a puppet for them. That's definitely part of it. There's a fear. They also like to threaten you with that. No one will ever love you like I do. No one would care about you the way I do, which is complete baloney. But you hear that enough, you start to believe it. The other thing is, in some severe situation, like, I'm very blessed that I was not officially living with this person. We were playing house, but like, I had my own apartment, so I had somewhere to retreat to. But one of the staples when people are in these long-term relationships, they isolate you. They literally take you away from your support system. So you don't have the friends and family that you used to have, because they tell you that those people aren't good for you. And the reason, it's again, it's calculated, because these abusers want you to have less and less influence, because the more people you start talking about this is what's going on, the more people that are going to be like, are you sure that's healthy for you? And then you're on the scent of their trail, right? So it really does feel like plotting your escape. And the other reason is because you cannot have a normal breakup combo like you would with anyone. Hey, like, really appreciate our time together. This isn't what I'm looking for, though. Wish you all the best. You cannot have a conversation like that with a narcissist, because two things will happen. One, they are going to try to say everything you want to hear to manipulate you to stay. And two, if that doesn't work, they're going to lean into narcissistic rage where they just blow up at you. And in some cases, the NPD also leaks into physical abuse, and now you're putting yourself in harm's way. So there's a lot of education that needs to happen. And I like to say it's like a chess match. Like, you got to think two steps ahead always when you're dealing with people like this.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So when dealing with people like this, let's say there's a relationship we can't get out of, whether, like you said, your parent or a co-parent or a colleague. What are some tips people could use to deal with people who display this narcissistic behavior?
Yeah. Well, my big one is like learning how to regulate your nervous system, which is a really sciencey, fancy way of just saying like soothe and be in your body. And which on the surface level, like when we really look at it, it allows you to heal triggers, you know, the things that really just get under your skin and cause you to emotionally react. That's how you would heal triggers as well. But the reason it's so imperative is because for narcissistic abuse survivors, you are never in what's called your window of tolerance. You're always in a survival state where you're always walking on eggshells, you're hyper vigilant, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop, anticipating their moods. And that's no way to live. And so, you know, if we can't change the environment, what we can do is at least establish safety with self by regulating the nervous system and being able to develop some kind of safe sanctuary. Like in childhood for me, when I was living with my parent, it was my closet. There was just something about being in a smaller space for me as a kid that made me feel like I'm okay here. Other people, it might be like a treehouse or a gazebo, like any kind of escapist way. For some people, it's their car. Like I have so many clients when they're first divorcing their narcissistic partner, they're like, I hang out in my car because it's the only place I feel like I can just be. You know, so I think one is finding a safe space that you can really make your own, no matter what that safe space is. I think learning how to regulate your nervous system for sure. And then as far as like for me, I ended up cutting my narcissistic parent out almost 4 years ago, too. And so for those, like there are these drastic situations where you might have to do that. And it's not an easy decision to come to. But, you know, I always like to say, at what cost am I staying in this relationship? And when it's costing me my own peace and mental health, that's too expensive. So I just was like, bye, love you. And unless you're willing to go to therapy, I need to see myself out of this situation. And so that was that.
Yeah, that's actually kind of leading into my question is, is there a happy ending for narcissism?
Oh.
Like, is it like the Scarlet A, like you branded a narcissist and then that's it?
Well, I mean, so there's two things I want to say here. Can a narcissist change is very different than will a narcissist change? Okay. So like when we look at the underbelly, if you will, of where narcissism comes from, it comes from deep, deep, deep unresolved trauma. And the beautiful thing about our brains is that they're plastic, right? They're malleable, neuroplasticity, right? So that means that we as humans have the capability to heal if we desire, and if we remain consistent. It's like the same thing is going to the gym. I tell my clients, you got to get your healing reps in. You know, you don't go to the gym, do 50 crunches and leave thinking you're going to have a six pack. That's not how it works. You have to be consistent. You got to show up even on the days where you don't feel like it. Same thing with healing. And so we have self-aware narcissists who have been diagnosed, who have gone to therapy, who stay in therapy for years, wanting to figure out how to manage their personality disorder. So I feel like we need to give credit to those people. However, at the same time, it is very, very, very rare. And so I always answer this question with caution because I don't want someone to hold out for hope when it is something that really rarely happens. And it's usually court ordered, like I mentioned with my experience before. And so the sad reality is because narcissists are incapable of sustaining any kind of relationship, not just romantic, but like parental, friendship, co-working, all of that, they really don't have happy endings because they end up isolating themselves by the way they treat people, right? They can't have deep, vulnerable friendships because they're incapable of the empathy that a friendship requires to sustain for years. It sounds like y'all have, you know, you've been through thick and thin together. You're able to call one another up and be like, yo, this is what I'm going through. Can I have you play devil's advocate? Or what advice would you give me? Or like, hey, just hold space for me while I feel my feelings. Like, narcissists cannot do that. And so because of that inability to do so, they literally usually have pretty lonely lives, especially towards the end as they get older. Yeah.
So what you're saying to me is that narcissism is the psychological herpes. Oh. Like you just can't get rid of herpes. You just can't get rid of narcissism.
Yeah. You can manage it.
An outbreak. Yeah, you have an outbreak from time to time, but that's it.
Yeah.
It's with you.
Yeah, you can manage it, but it's not something that's just like you pop a pill and you fix. No. Yeah.
Damn. That's a scary thought. I mean,
Yeah, for real.
Like, because it's basically it's almost like saying you have it, like, just the herpes, you know, I'll say an incurable disease. And there's really nothing you can do about it. And the fact that you're saying that they can't, right? That narcissists can't, you know, and then they won't have happy endings at the end of it, which is a scary, scary thought. If I were all of a sudden said, well, you're a narcissist and good luck to you, but there's nothing you can do for yourself. That's very scary.
Yeah.
But it's almost like you have to, the only option is to cut off, because it seems like if you're a narcissist, if I'm the narcissist, mm-hmm. I won't even recognize that I'm the narcissist, because my narcissism won't even allow me to, correct?
Exactly. They can't self-reflect. So it's like, mm-hmm. that's why we see a lot of the abuse behaviors that we see, like gaslighting and blame shifting and triangulation. They're always, you know, I like to say their motto is rules for thee, not for me, right? This has happened because of you. This applies to you, but not me. They have that inability to self-reflect. And so, like I said, it's usually court ordered and why they get diagnosed, because some crazy thing happens. They get their butt sent to therapy because of whatever happened. And now this is coming to the light. And so there's one self-aware narcissist that has a pretty good following that I definitely lurk. And I think what he's trying to do is so admirable, because he's trying to educate people on his own narcissism. But he's married with children and very much owns up to, don't stay with us. It is not easy. Like, he gives a lot of credit to his wife for sticking with him. And they go to therapy all the time. And he's in therapy all the time on his own, and has been for over 5 years. So it's like, again, you can manage it, but there's going to be a lot of, it's almost like holding a porcupine. Like, yeah, it's cute and cuddly, but you can get hurt, you know, and you will get hurt. So,
you know, that's actually a pretty, well, before I ask my question, I just want to put it out there. The My 5 Cents podcast is not herpes shaming anybody.
Yeah.
So all you listeners, we're not herpes shaming.
Thank you for the disclaimer, HLS.
Yes. Yeah.
But let me ask you this. You said it's kind of like holding a porcupine.
Yeah.
Are narcissists selective in any way? Like, can you have these tendencies for certain people but not the world?
Ooh, okay. So yes and no. Let's talk about that. So are they selective? Yeah. They go after two things they kind of look for, especially if we're looking for, like, if we're going to talk partnership, because a narcissistic partner will become a narcissistic parent. Like, narcissistic parents do not choose their children. Does that make sense? So it's like, if they're seeking partnership, they're going to go after someone who has these two criteria. One, someone they admire. Narcissists date up. Okay, so if you have been with a narcissist, consider it a compliment in a weird ass way, because, like, they have valued something in you, right? But at the same time, they go for someone who they can take advantage of, and they can see they can take advantage of you. So someone who has empathy without boundaries, who overly gives, who overly forgives, who has too much compassion, because compassion is a wonderful thing to have. But going back to what you said at the start of the show is, like, they can have self-love, but there is a consideration for how other people feel. Like, a healthy human is what I'm describing, but that comes with limitations, right? If you burn me, I'm going to notice that, and I'm going to hold that boundary, right? That's what a healthy human can do. They're like, you've proved me once, right? This is the pattern you have. Now I'm going to make a conscious decision moving forward on how much access you have to me. That's healthy human behavior. Someone who has empathy without boundaries is like, well, let me give you more love and see if I convince you to be a better person. Let me give you more grace. Let me give you more forgiveness. And I'm just going to keep on giving. So of course that person is going to suck the life out of them, because they have proven to the narcissist that the narcissist can treat you any which way and still have access to you, you know? So they're selective for those two things. Yeah. Wow.
Are there levels to it?
Oh, hell yeah. Narcissism is a spectrum. So, like, on the lower end,
that's what I would have.
Yeah. On the lower end, we have someone who has, like, narcissistic tendencies, who, like, might be a relatively pretty good friend, but then every once in a while, it's like, ooh, like, that's kind of narcissistic, right? And then you have people who are full blown, like, NPD, straight up, you know, follow the abuse cycle, have the diagnostic criteria for the personality disorder and all that. Yeah.
I mean, it makes you wonder, like, if there's anyone that's level, like, zero, right? Are there people who have no levels of narcissism in them?
Yeah.
Like, and I'm curious who that person is, because I feel like some of the things you described, like, almost every single person I've known, friend, family, coworkers, you know, casual meetings has some level at certain point, or demonstrates that level at certain point. I feel like it applies to any and everyone.
Right. There are some folks on the interwebs that say healthy narcissism is kind of what you're describing, where it's like,
okay,
you have limitations for what you will and won't tolerate. I think that waters down when we use that, like healthy narcissism. I think it waters down people who truly have been exposed to narcissistic abuse. It waters down their experience, right? Because it's like the word that's being twisted to be like healthy mm-hmm. narcissism. What I like to say is you have self-respect, you have self-love, and you have boundaries, right? Now, to some people, that might seem narcissistic because of the lens in which they're interpreting those behaviors. But that's why we need to look at the holistic person and watch for the patterns of behavior to even be able to use that word. Does that make sense?
It does. Okay. It does.
Yeah.
Is this something you need to be diagnosed with?
Yeah. Technically, narcissistic personality disorder is a diagnosis that can only be given from a psychiatrist, which I am not. Mm-hmm. I do not diagnose anyone. I do not diagnose anyone. That's not my wheelhouse. My wheelhouse is in trauma work, right? Well, I never question someone's experience, because when we look at trauma, when we question someone's experience, it really starts to re-traumatize them. So a lot of trauma work, we really need to lean into validation and understanding and curiosity to be able to get through to the patient in this scenario, and then like unwind the trauma from there. But that's why I like to use the word narcissistic versus calling someone a narcissist, because unless they have a diagnosis, you can't say you're a narcissist. You can say, wow, you're being narcissistic. Those are two very different words to me, at least. Yeah.
Understood. Yeah.
Tendency versus actual behavior.
Exactly.
I guess, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My goodness. So I definitely feel enlightened. I don't know about you guys.
Like,
I was going to ask, is there a survey I can take just to make sure that I'm on the spectrum? I don't know.
Oh my God.
I feel like you were talking about life.
I would have. I'd be like, guys, I have narcissism. Like, it's over for me. Like, cut me off. Like, oh my gosh. I just. Oh. So,
it's a lot to process.
Yeah, we've talked a lot. I feel like maybe more towards the negative piece.
I know.
But this topic is really about love.
Yeah, really. Let's talk about the good stuff.
What a transition.
Yo, this transition, that might have been the most stressful transition on the show. Yeah. We're in our third year. That one, I'm like, oh man, the narcissism. It was heavy.
It was heavy.
That was definitely heavy. So we're going to get into our topic for this week. And our topic, as mentioned by HLS, is the 5 skills necessary for a healthy long-term love.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen next is Logical Genius is going to break down actually what's going to happen next.
All right, Alex, you've established your credibility with our listeners and with us. So you know your stuff. As crazy as that segment was, we've established the things, you know, dealing with relationships and all of that. So what we're going to do for you today is present to you our top 5 skills necessary for healthy long-term love. Mm-hmm. Each of us, HLS, Soso Juve, and I are going to present to you our list on this topic, and you get to decide who has the best list. We don't know what each other's lists are. I don't know what HLS has. I don't know what Soso Juve has. I know what I have, which is the best list. But you get to decide. You get to decide which one of us has the best list. We want to know who's in third place.
Okay.
Because we need to laugh at them. We don't care about second place.
No participation trophies here.
Yeah, no participation trophies. We don't give a damn about second place, because why? And we need to know which one of us has the best list. And you get to decide that.
Cool. Let's go.
HLS, our habitual line stepper, can you please explain to our guest what is the criteria for judging?
So we kind of just talked about it, right? There's a criteria that you need to pass to become diagnosed narcissistic, right? Mm-hmm. There's also a criteria for judging, which is there is no criteria.
None.
You might like the fact that I am self-diagnosed a champion. Not narcissistic, just a champion. I self-diagnose myself, and that's why you might choose me number one.
Cool.
You might like the fact that I have gone through trauma listening to this every single week. Every week I have to listen to this. And therefore, I need to be healed in that trauma. And therefore, that's why you pick me.
You might like the fact that the other two people are suffering from delusions of grandeur. And that the one person who has the best list is the one that's speaking right now. But you get to decide that.
It's completely up to you. Whatever you decide is completely up to you. However, your first decision, you get to do it now. You need to decide who goes first.
Let's go.
Okay. So Alex, I'll start it this way. I'm a man of a certain age. Mm-hmm. I've traveled the world. Mm-hmm. I've seen love in different cultures. I've seen love in the club like Usher.
Yeah.
I've seen love. I think I know a thing or two about love. What I also know is a lot of short-term love.
Mm.
So my list is the opposite. At number five, the fifth skill on my list that you need for a long-term love is patience.
Mm.
You know, we're all going through trials and tribulations at times, whether it's a parent or an animal or work and the stress. And sometimes it's a misunderstanding. And, you know, you kind of have to give somebody grace. You just need to show a little patience for your loved one. And that might sustain the romance, sustain the love. And number four, you need to communicate.
Mm.
But the trick is you need to be effective. You need effective verbal and nonverbal communication. Mm. Everybody could talk, but not everyone knows how to communicate. It's very different. It's very different. And number three, you have to know how to negotiate. You have to know how to negotiate. I do dishes. You cook. I'll go to your parents' anniversary if you come to my sister's wedding. And that also kind of ties into teamwork, mm-hmm. right? Where it's sort of like you can only have one quarterback. Hey, listen, this is my role in this relationship. I'll be the breadwinner. But if I'm the breadwinner, you have to do your part. Whether maybe cook, maybe take care of the kids, maybe take care of the house. There has to be a balance of power. There has to be teamwork involved. That way no one feels like they're taken advantage of.
Mm.
And number one, the number one skill you need to have for a healthy long-term love is empathy.
Mm.
There are times where someone's going through something. You have to be able to feel it. You have to be able to feel it. We had an episode, I think it was year one, with the lovely and talented Jane and Marie. I won that episode. Thank you very much. And one thing on my list was feeling alone, even when you're together with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
But you have envy to the person, you may not feel alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that, Alex, is my 5 cents on the 5 skills necessary for a healthy long-term love.
He's setting the bar high, y'all. That was impressive.
That's
thank
not
you.
That high.
Thank you so much.
I'm excited to hear. I'm in therapy.
This is where I learn
how to use
the
love that.
Who do you want to hear from next?
Juve, let's go.
In the building. Oh my goodness. The nonsense that, well, it wasn't nonsense, yeah, but we're just going to go with whatever it is that HLS said. I am in the building and I'm going to give you my 5 cents on the skills necessary for healthy long-term love.
Yeah.
And at number five, we have listening for understanding.
Mm.
Far too often, people listen to respond as opposed to listen to actually understand where the other person is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
At number four, I had empathy, but in this recording, you said something that triggered me. So it's empathy with boundaries.
Oh.
You gotta have boundaries on your empathy. So that is my number four there. You gotta. Not, it's not just empathy, it is
nice
empathy
twist.
With boundaries.
Nice twist.
Empathy with no boundaries, I have just learned, not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
At number three, clear expression of expectations.
Mm.
See, there's this thing that was going on social media, something about a man used to sleep with his wife or had his girlfriend, maybe fiance, and then all of a sudden the faucet had just turned off. And there was a big conversation about whether or not that is in the contract and whether or not it's actually discussed beforehand. I don't think people talk about that enough. They think that, oh, we get married happily ever after, but don't talk about what does that happily ever after actually look like.
Yep.
Like, hey, when we get married, yeah, I still expect to have sex 3 times a week, 4 times a week, whatever it is that your number is. Yeah. And that doesn't happen, and therefore it leads to that short-term love. And number two, I have work ethic. Making something last for a long time is not easy. It takes work. Mm-hmm. And I think what has happened is we have Disney World love, you know, the Disney movies like Snow White, My Prince Charming. We put this all into the psyche, or it's definitely been placed in my psyche as a little kid growing up and thinking that love is just this magical thing that I eat an apple and then I'm good or something like that. And it's not that. You have to work. If you want to make it last, you have to work at it.
Yeah.
And at number one, Michael Jackson said it best. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. You gotta have self-awareness.
Love it. You have to have
self-awareness of your emotions.
And I thought you were gonna say beat it because you're not getting sex at home.
That's a good one.
You know, I was getting deep on my soul, man, and the emotion behind the man in the mirror.
You resist. You alley-ooped it for me. You alley-ooped it for me. Again, run it back.
No. Because you have no self-awareness. You can tell that I was in an emotional state. And you just...
It's not self-awareness. He has no empathy. That's what it is.
And all of it. Okay, you're violating. That's why your list is Bushu.
I'm in therapy. I'm working on it.
So to finish my thought, number one is self-awareness. Got to be aware of where you are at, especially emotionally, because you might not be in a place to be able to interact with your partner. Yes. And knowing that, and then being able to set the boundaries. Hey, listen, I would like to talk about this, but I'm not in a good space.
Mm.
And if you're able to do that, be able to be self-aware, I think that you're on the right steps right there.
Word.
So that's my 5 cents on the topic.
Also really now, impressive.
Thank you. Now, you might like this because you said you're a nerd at heart. And we got the biggest nerd on the show about to go next.
Let's go.
And
that is
Alex, so those are very, I got to admit, those are very interesting lists from SocioJuve and HLS. I am very impressed by that. So here's my angle. I don't always have an angle, right? The angle is really this, like, all right, if I give somebody this list that, and you follow these 5 things in your list, you should be good in your relationship and it'll last forever, right? So I agree with number five for me. With a lot of what SocioJuve and HLS says, communication, right? Communication is the key or one of the keys in every single relationship. You need to be able to talk openly, but you also, communication is a two-way street, so you need to be able to listen. So I think that's just a no-brainer. I won't go into more detail other than what was already been said. At number four is empathy for me. You have the ability to see and feel what your partner is seeing and feeling. If you can't connect with that, then why are you even in a relationship? If you can't connect with another person, why bother? Like you said it about narcissists, like they have trouble connecting. And the gentleman that you mentioned, the social media guy, was like, don't be with us, right? Because they know. So if someone is lacking empathy, that's going to be hard for you to last and sustain in a long-term relationship.
Mm-hmm.
At number three, I think you touched on this, but I'm calling it, or it's been called, I guess, emotional regulation.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like self-awareness, but a little bit more than that. It's one thing to be self-aware, but it's another thing to kind of know how to control that, especially in romantic relationships. People don't know how to emotionally regulate themselves. When you're at work and you have a bad situation and people are yelling at each other, or somebody's yelling at you, a colleague or whatever, your boss, you don't always blow up at them, right? You regulate. That you keep yourself in line, you go for a walk, you go grab some coffee, you drink some water, you jump on your phone, you do something to calm yourself emotionally. A lot of people do not do this in relationships for some reason. They completely ignore that skill when it comes to their personal relationships, their romantic relationships, and they are willing to blow up in a fight like that and not realize, let me take a step back and calm myself. So I think that's a skill set that people often overlook in a relationship. And number two is something I learned a couple of years ago. We've heard of emotional intelligence. We've heard of social intelligence. This is called erotic intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. Because relationships are physical, right? You have to have the ability to understand and appreciate how to navigate your own sexual desires, mm-hmm. as well as the sexual desires of other people. And the boundaries are within that relationship, because relationships are an intimate thing. And it's not just emotional. It's not just emotional. It's physical as well. And having that erotic intelligence will help you last in the long term. And at number one for me, this is something I've always said when it comes to life in general. Comedic skill. You have to be able to laugh in your relationship, right? And I'm not saying you have to be the funniest person in the world and make everyone in the world laugh. Make that one person you love laugh. That's all you need to do, is to make that one person laugh. And if you can make each other laugh and be in this relationship, you'll see that you'll have a much longer and fruitful relationship, because laughter converts into other things. It becomes positive energy. Relationship isn't as serious. I mean, there's all types of emotions in relationships, love, anger, jealousy, and all of that. But people often forget the laughing part. And that, again, is a positive emotion, and that helps foster warmth and connection with you and your partner. And Allie, that is my list.
That was also great. You guys are going to make this hard on me.
Oh, never said it was going to be easy.
It's never going to be easy.
Why did you do that?
So this is kind of one of those "it sucks to be you" moments right there, Ms. Scott. But what's going to happen is you get a little bit of time to kind of think on it. What we're going to do is, next week, we're going to get into the persuasion side of things, where we will go over a little bit of cross-examination. You'll get to deliberate, and then you get to share with us your 5 cents on the topic. So tune in next week to hear what the great Alex Scott has to say, and who she decides is going to be in third place and who is in first. See y'all next week.